You're listening to 101.5 FM on UMFM. Good afternoon, and welcome to U-Talk. I'm your host, Ryan Funk. What is it about music that is so alluring? What is it that causes people to write ballads or sing in front of a crowd? Two musicians will take us on their musical journeys about creating an experience for others, inspiring climate action, finding yourself in the music, and the challenges of navigating the music industry. We'll also take some time to appreciate the music of these musicians, Noreen Braun and Wishka. Let's get into it. Humans have done amazing things, building massive structures, creating mesmerizing art, and witnessing the cosmos. However, we've put an enormous strain on our planet with these accomplishments. A musician has released an album to invoke the healing nature of trees and encourage listeners to think about their world and the climate. The album is called Songs for Trees.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here, Ryan. My name's Noreen Braun, and I live in Vancouver, the unceded Coast Salish territory of Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh people. My ancestry is mixed heritage. I'm Ukrainian and Métis. And Métis Cree, Métis Lakota Sioux, actually, my origins come from Manitoba. So it's great to be here. And I'm a singer-songwriter. I just released my 13th album, and it's called Songs for Trees.
I just think it's so funny because I was talking with a musician yesterday, and he's also originally from Manitoba. So it's just, it's like, huh, everyone just starts in Manitoba, and then it spreads.
The origins of the species are Manitoba. <Yeah.
laughs> This is your 13th album. That's really incredible. Song for Trees. What first set you on the path to create music?
Music's my calling, and it's been part of my life right from the beginning. My mom said that I sang before I talked, and I danced before I walked. So I first started writing songs when I was 10. I picked up a guitar, and I took a year of lessons, and then I left, and I was self-taught. I had an older brother who played guitar, and I started early years, and it wasn't actually until my early 30s that I decided to pursue it as a career and to start putting music out into the public domain. So it's been a journey. I was a late bloomer, really, in a lot of
it's never too late to get into music.
No, exactly. Although I was told in my 30s you should have been doing this like in your 20s, but I didn't really listen to those people. So I thought, well, I mean, I think you make music your whole life, so maybe I'm not going to be Madonna. That's okay. I'm going to be a successful grassroots musician. So yeah, it's never too late. And don't let anyone tell you that you can't.
Your music is just so fun listening to it. The different parts between the songs where it's just like the babbling of a brook or the wind through a tree. Like it is definitely a piece that if you just put it on while you're just listening to music, having like a cup of tea or just kind of relaxing in the evening, it brings you places. It really emotes a certain feeling, at least for yourself. What are some the emotions or thoughts that you put in to create this piece?
Well, I think I'm glad that that's the effect it's having on you, because that certainly the intention we had for making this. It is to be, it's a conceptual album, so I wanted people to listen to it and to be taken on a journey through the forest. So all of those feelings that you get when you go on a forest walk, I'm hoping that that's what it's going to bring out. So that's why I wanted to include natural sounds. So for walking in the forest and the creek and the fire and all of those things. As soon as people listen to them, I've had several friends say, as soon as they listen, their shoulders drop, and they're natural sounds. So I think that's the beauty of the forest. And so I wanted a sense of joy, a sense of reverence, a sense of relaxation, a sense of connection. So all of those feelings, and certainly I wanted it to be listened in one sitting so that a person takes it. So it's not really a singles kind of album, although I am releasing singles on it. The intention is supposed to be like a concept album. So from beginning to end, come with me for an hour and relax and enjoy a forest walk.
I find that's an experience that people at least don't do too often. Nowadays, it's all about the hits, the singles right now to, you know, get the songs out on TikTok, whatever grabs attention. There is something, I guess, ethereal or magical to sit down and enjoy an entire...
Yeah, certainly back in my day when I was a teenager, that's what we did, is we put our headphones on and we didn't have phones, or cell phones. We just listened to the music and immerse ourselves in the music. And that was really, I was going back to that kind of a memory. To turn off your phones, turn off your everything and just put the headphones on and listen. So, because I think we have what kind awesome, of lost man. That. We need instant gratifications and always stimulated, you know, our attention spans are shrinking. So I'm hoping I'll influence some people. Just take an hour out and chill with me.
So I definitely want to sit down with my friends, just, you know, go to the park at night when it's dark. All you can see is the stars and just sit
Sounds
there
beautiful.
And listen.
Yeah, I'll be with you.
This is your 13th album. What are some of the sounds or themes that you've tried to hit on in your previous works?
I got sort of all for this one was a blues roots rock. It was called December Falls. It was a Christmas album. And so we went for like a party mood, a celebratory mood, but we did some different twists on old classics. And then I did some originals on it as well. So that's sort of my live sound tends to be, when I play with a full band, it tends to be on the bluesier side. So there's always a blues influence. Like I always have at least one blues song, which I do in Songs for Trees as well. So there's a blues element to most of my work. Also jazz, blues and jazz kind of go hand in hand. I do spoken word. I did an album called Gone to the Spirits, which I received a Canada Council for the Arts Award to write it, as well as I did for Songs for Trees too. But that album was about 20 years in the making. And a friend of mine was doing his undergrad in archaeology, and he told me about this person called Gone to the Spirits. It was a two-spirit warrior woman who lived 200 years ago in the interior of BC near Creston. And she had lived as a woman, met an explorer, divorced because the cultures were so different. And she transformed and lived the rest of her days as a man. And she's had wives and had amassed a great fortune of 26 horses, which was the currency of the time. And so her story was just so amazing. My friend said, oh, you should write a song. So I ended up writing a whole album about her. And that we kind of incorporated like contemporary. It was contemporary, kind of tribal primal percussive sound, sort of trying to go back in time to sort of take the person on. Again, it was a conceptual album to take them on a journey back to her time and her story. So, yeah. So I like contemporary music. So my blues, jazz, spoken word. I have done a bit of hip hop, but that was about 20 years ago. a little bit of soul, a little bit of country. So yeah. So each album, like my earlier work is more pop, I would say, of the time period, like 2003, Now and Zen, that's kind of a pop album. But again, because I'm a songwriter, I tend toward multiple genres. And I think thankfully people are sophisticated enough these days that they don't mind. They want to put you in the box. Like, what are you? What's your genre? But I think most people like multiple genres and listen, and they're, you know, and that's certainly what I am as a writer. But if you ask me what's my form, it would be AAA radio. So adult alternative, I think. Adult album alternative, yeah.
You definitely want to have a little bit of flexibility because, you know, depending on your mood, your feelings, the occasions, the type of music that you want to listen to can completely change. Like when you're at an upbeat party, you don't want to be listening to something kind of like slow, ethereal, soulful. Yeah. But like in other moments, you don't want like dubstep when you're trying to relax around a fire with friends. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, so there's different sounds for different times. Yeah, that's a great point.
You know, 10% of your sales are going to Tree Canada and One Tree Planted. You know, why was it important to you to focus on, you know, climate change and the healing power of trees for this release?
I think we're at a critical time, really, with global warming. And in my small way as an artist, I'm trying to raise that awareness on the importance that trees are the lungs of the planet. And without trees to sustain us, we won't be here. They're really, you know, they're the perfect being, earth specimen to clear carbon up. That's a big motivator. Here, when I was writing this album, we had a heat dome in Vancouver and hundreds of people passed away, the vulnerable people, because of this heat dome. It was crazy. And then after that, we had these horrific wildfires, and then we had 4 water days of rain, and then we had this massive flooding. And it's just sort of one thing after another. And it's like, how can people deny that this is happening? I don't get it.
When we're seeing reports being released from the UN, it's not good news. And I mean, it is great to see that there has been a lot of efforts from people like yourself working towards it, scientists, activists really fighting towards, you know, negating. Because I know back in the early 90s, the predictions were like doomsday sort of levels, like the world engulfed in a fireball. And I mean, the news now, like +3 degrees worldwide is not good for our oceans, for the planet, but it is worse than, or not as bad as the doomsday it was before, but there's still so much effort that needs to be done. Well, how do you feel that we can all work together towards creating a cleaner world?
And what was really amazing during the pandemic, when everything was shut down in the world for a while, how fast the water started to clear and the ozone started to come back. And I thought that was a very promising and hopeful that we could still turn it around with a map, but it would take a mass, you know, buy into it all. I think it's all the little things that we do. I think all the little things we do add up. So whether it's, you know, picking up our garbage in our neighborhood, if it's living sustainably, being conscious about what we're throwing away, if it's planting a tree, you know, looking at our own footprint in terms of our living on the planet. I think all of those things, if everyone became just aware of their own neighborhood and started to care about their own neighborhood, I think collectively that would be huge. You know, you see some of these, you know, there's like, they're on the Facebook quite a bit, people in like South America and in India, like one person who's like reforested huge areas. And so like, that's really amazing that one person can make such a huge difference. And, you know, there's young people who are looking at how to clear out the plastic from the oceans. And so you have like a lot of people working really hard in their different disciplines, educating and trying to get people on board. So I think that's how we do it, is everybody do a little part into what they're, you know, and it'll make a difference. It has to, because nothing goes unnoticed by nature.
Exactly. All of us working together. And then as individuals, when we become more eco-conscious, we start challenging corporations. And if people stop buying things, like I know the biggest challenge is, you know, going to the grocery store and everything's wrapped in plastic. I know I'm going out of my way to, you know, find things that aren't completely covered in cellophane. But it can be hard sometimes. But you're right. If we as individuals work hard, I know for myself, I'm a large proponent of, you know, developing systems and safety nets and creating, you know, just the system overall where everyone is cared for and has resources. Because, you know, when people have a home, food, water, then they can actually have that free time to care about other things when you're not just, in complete survival mode. Because I know statistically, if people are struggling to pay their paychecks or like their rent or things, or, you know, they're living paycheck to paycheck, IQ levels actually go down because you don't have time to think about anything else.
Exactly. Yeah. You just want to live this day. So, yeah, I mean, our society, if we care for everyone, it's to everyone's benefit. You know, crime rates go down, the way we live, we get along with each other improves. It's just kind of common sense, really. If people aren't all struggling and trying to, you know, to just find the next meal or the next place to sleep, it just creates this constant state of tension and, you know, and people steal and do those things because they're totally desperate. Right. Yeah. So all of those things go hand in hand. So I think the state of our environment is reflective of the state of how we care for each other, you know, and when we see that, you know, things are sacred, we protect everything, including each other. Definitely. So, I mean, in a capitalist society, look at things, you know, like trees only have value as lumber. They don't have value as like cleaning the planet or just as a sacred beauty piece of art, right? This amazing, incredible thing. They're just like, let's cut them down and they have value when they're cut down.
Capitalism and consumerism has definitely disconnected us from our land and nature. If something can't be monetized, then it has no value in the system. But at least for myself, there's nothing more fulfilling than going for a walk and actually being able to see trees, to see animals. And I mean, there's not a lot of that here in Winnipeg. There are some really nice areas like the Forks that have that nature still clinging on there. But I would like to see a society where we prioritize nature, that cities are designed for people to walk around, to move, not focused entirely on vehicles. That's just me.
No, I think that's great. I think that's the route we're going to inevitably have to take, I think, to sustain a life on the planet.
Wouldn't a city look beautiful if it's just up the side of a building, it's just completely covered in green, walking down the boulevards and sidewalks? You could get to your local, like, bakeries or local clothing shops. You could just walk places. You didn't have to, or at least have more access to public transportation.
And if you had, like, public gardens that people can just go and take what they need.
That's always a struggle. Like,
we have some public gardens here in Vancouver, and I know in Seattle they've been doing that as well, which, you know, people can go and take what they need. And I think, like, more things like that, right?
So, well, there's so many empty lots in large urban centers that could easily be transformed, but it's just like, who owns it? Like, where's the... But that's another thing. A cool thing about your song is The Burning charted number 40 on the Indigenous Music Countdown the past week. You know, what was your reaction to hearing that?
Oh, I was really excited, and it's a great honor. It's actually up to number 30 this week, so I'm jumping another 10. it's a great honor. There's I have a few friends who are on it as well, and so it's great to be among them, and a lot of great talent and a lot of diversity on the list. So I'm honored that I'm part of the Indigenous Music Countdown, so it's exciting and it means more people get to hear the music. So
when your hard work is recognized, it feels good. It's not necessarily about like the monetary accomplishments of it, just the recognition that people are like, wow, this thing that you've poured your time and effort into, I love this. This is amazing.
It's getting noticed. Hey, people are listening. Yeah, it's great. It's good.
Having the arts supported and people engaged in the arts is just awesome.
That's how we get through things like the pandemic and global warming.
And it's just going to be continued efforts of people coming together, sharing songs and music like this, connecting us all on this like web of the world so that we can, you know, work towards a more brighter and cleaner future.
The arts will save us.
Exactly. You know, whenever we can see a boom in the arts, it is a sign of a flourishing society.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So you got any projects or ideas that you're in the works on right now?
I do. I'm actually, well, it's very, very much at the beginning. This year or last year, during the writing of Songs for Trees, my mom became very ill and passed away, sadly. So that album was also a way to move through that grief. I'm an adoptee, and it was my mother who adopted me, who raised me. And 2 days after mom's passing, I got a message through Ancestry DNA, which I've been trying to locate my birth father just for history, not necessarily for relationship. But I had no name, no anything. So I went through Ancestry about 10 years ago. But it was just very strange. 2 days after mom passed, I get this message and it was saying, oh, your birth father is alive and he knows of you and he wants to meet you. So I was totally, it was disorienting because it wasn't something I had expected. But this past year, we've been getting to know each other and I have cousins and aunts and a brother and all, and I've just been getting to know him and his life. And he's Métis from the Paw, Manitoba. So just last month, my partner and I, we drove from Vancouver to the Paw. Don't go there in April. It's not like Vancouver. It's like really cold. But we had this marvelous connection. So I'd like to write about that. And that's the focus, I think, of the next album will be, you know, I'm in my later years. So to meet this part of my history is really exciting and interesting. And I didn't have any expectations. It wasn't something I dreamed for, but it's life is funny. It has these twists that you can never know what's coming. So I think I'm going to explore that area and write some songs. It turns out I have a lot of members in my biological family who are musicians as well. So
It's in the blood.
Yeah. So we'll see how that evolves, but that will be as definitely the subject of, you know, reconnecting with my birth line.
I'm sorry for your loss. It's always difficult to mm-hmm. lose family members, but it is cool to hear that you have created this new connection with new family.
Yeah, a friend said to me it was her last gift to me, and somehow through the cosmos she kind of reached in, and because she would have been thrilled for me, she would have been very happy. So yeah, so it's all good so far. Well,
I'm excited to hear what sort of stories and songs that you can create from this.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's probably awesome. Be a couple of years down the road, the next album.
Well, it is something exciting to look forward to. Well, thank you so much. It's been awesome connecting and chatting with you. And I hope through listening through your music, more people are inspired to fall in love with nature. Where can people go to find out more about yourself and your music?
Thanks, Ryan. I'm on all digital platforms, so eMusic, iTunes, Amazon, Spotify, as well as my website, which is noreenbraun.com, noreenbraun.com. And I have hard copy CDs. If you're old school like me, I like CDs still. So I like something to hold and handle. So yeah, you can get them there. And I have YouTube channels, all social media. So I pretty much Google my name and you'll find me everywhere. Yeah.
You know we don't have- needs a chance to breathe. Underground and out of sight.
some worn tree became the might. Always standing in one place, ever watching, holding space. Seedling, sapling, stately tall. Cycles one becomes the all. I remember aspen groves. They were born from far below, underground. From far below, I remember aspen groves. They were born from far below. I remember aspen groves. They were born from far below. I remember aspen groves. They were born from far.
Having been a member of several bands over the years, Jesse wanted to create a passion project with his wife Tessa. In the independent release, I Think You and Maybe Me, the songs were written to explore new ways of making noise and facilitating unique manners of imagining possible futures. Sit back, relax, and enjoy as we take you on a journey of understanding our connection to music, the challenges people face in the music industry, and learning how to enjoy life.
I'm Jesse. I'm from Wishka, which is a project with my wife and myself. We're in Halifax right now. We were in Montreal for about 15 years. That's where I first started doing Wishka. And I've been in a number of bands in my time. I'm old. And yeah, so we've just finished a 4-song piece that we're putting out. Will be the first time that I've worked with her. And I think it's a start of something new, and we're excited to have the opportunity to talk about it with you. So thank you for having me.
No worries. just listening to the song, it's really fun, and you can really feel the passion. So you're originally from Montreal.
I'm from Ontario. My wife is from Nova Scotia, rural. But we lived in Montreal for about 15 years, and we moved out here about 2.5-3 years ago, roughly in that area.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to know a lot of people from Winnipeg in Montreal.
Yeah, really? Nice.
Yeah, you know, there's a huge kind of expat scene there. And I heard endlessly about all the awesome, like, no age shows. And you guys had a really vibrant, awesome, or maybe you probably still do, music scene. It was nothing like what I grew up in.
Yeah, it's definitely really fun, like, going to the different bars and pubs and listening to local musicians play. It's really fun, and you never know what you're going to find. I mean, because COVID and everything was very quiet for a long time.
Yeah.
But it's coming back with a bang. So, I mean, there's Folk Fest and everything coming up soon.
Yeah, I get the feeling, at least the impression from the people I know, that it's a pretty supportive place to be a young musician. And I mean, where I grew up in Ontario, especially in Toronto at the time, wasn't lovely. And Montreal is a very awesome and creative place, but there seems a sense of community coming out of Winnipeg. And I get the feeling from Saskatoon as well, where it's just like a vibrant place to, you know, cut your teeth.
I guess compared to some other Winnipeg cities Canadian cities, Winnipeg's kind of medium size, and I think it's those like medium sized cities where the community really connects and is able to support the arts in a fun and unique way.
Yeah.
What is it, Wishka? It's a very unique name. Yeah. How'd you come up with it?
Wishka is a river in Washington State. It's about 60 kilometers long, and it's the river where the fabled bridge where Kurt Cobain lived under for the song Something in the Way. And their live album released after his passing, From the Muddy Banks of the Wishka. So when I was starting this project, I was just kind of winding down the band I'd been in Montreal called Citizenship. And I put a lot of effort into that band. And it came very close to breaking and doing quite well. And it just didn't. And so I was pretty, it had hit hard. So I, you know, put 6-7 years and this thing seemed for a moment like it was really going to go somewhere. And then kind of in the aftermath, I was left a little older, questioning, well, what am I doing? Am I still doing this? I have children on the way. Like, what am I up to? And I decided I was going to keep going, keep doing it. So I was thinking of a name for this new project, and I wanted it to reflect purely personally kind of my why I wanted to keep doing it. And I was just kind of tapping back into Nirvana was the first band that I liked for myself and obsessed with and bought all and listened to all the rarities endlessly on tapes and basements. And I didn't want to have a name that was too specifically referential, but I always, From the Muddy Banks of the Wish Go is my favorite live album, and I like the name. And so I thought, I'll just do that, throw in another A so it's a little easier to reference Google-wise. And that's basically where I got the name from.
When you're building a project or building an idea, to take things that you're already passionate about to implement it into there.
I'd never done that before. I'd never been someone who had a lot of foresight. And so I decided for this one, I'll be a little more purposeful and a little less kind of see to your pants on what exactly it is.
What is your relationship with music and how has it inspired, I think, you and maybe me?
I think that I like that question for myself, but this would be true for everyone. The visceral connection we feel to the various musics that we like comes from, I think it is a form of communication that interprets the world through an emotive lens. Actually, it's been interesting. I've read a couple papers recently by some prominent linguists who are more and more advocating that music came first before language. Music is a little primordial, where we're the only creature that has like grammatical language, structured, reasoned language, but a ton of animals have communication, complex communication, whales and birds being most obvious. And that ours would have been very similar and comes from an older time. And so the reason we connect to it is because it does express, or it allows us to express, an understanding and interpretation of the world that is more fluid than our kind of structured, reasonable, grammatical language. And so I was thinking of those ideas as I was doing this record and what it exactly was I was wanted to express and use music for. And I got into pop music, and I'm not a particularly good player or, you know, advanced musician in any sense. And I was struggling with the value of pop music right now. Is there a point considering everything? And what I kind of landed on for myself to justify it was that I think that pop music, although under, you know, capitalist system is incredibly commercial, at its essence and heart, it is still just a communal understanding and expression of the world as the people on the ground at that time see it. And you can take that back to the mists of history in every single culture. We sing and we dance to try to understand the world we live in. And with that, I felt a little more comfortable doing these songs. And so I thought, well, what am I going to do? You know, climatic collapse, rise of authoritarianism, a left that can't reach it, the, you know, late stage capitalism, early stage techno-feudalism, there's a lot going on. I didn't want to be too overtly political because I find that gets pretentious. So I thought, how can you use the sonic sounds lyrically in a pop format, but using pop in the sense of like a group communal, like let's talk about what's happening, but in a way that's not preachy, that's just express what the hell is going on. And so those were kind of the thoughts and the relationship to music as a tool to express that sort of emotional understanding of a very complicated world we're living in right now. And that's what I was kind of aiming for with these four songs. At least attempt it, to take a stab at it.
That you don't have to be the best. You don't have to be the Mozart of the generation. You don't have to have the most complicated lyrics or notes in the song. If you're coming from the heart or the soul, a song can have major impact, even if it's not quote-unquote, the best. YouTuber I follow recently just released a song that he's been working on, and you can really feel about the pain and anxiety that he's feeling right now in the world. And it's, yeah, you really feel that connection.
I think that's important, and I think we're going to steer more and more, the way I see it, the format that we've been working under in pop music, where you have these big superstars and you have everything is kind of like hierarchically the best and everything down, is going to start dissipating, and it'll become local won't be kind of a euphemism for less successful. If that, it'll just be, we are going to go back to, I hope, or I would want to share a music book outside of just thinking about how you can profit from it, because it's the most important one of the ways that we communicate so well and love, and it all matters. And there's a place for high art, classical music, jazz. These things are kind of like societal expressions, I think, of, and they, those do take like masters. But on the day-to-day level, it is just as important, if not more, for all of us to be able to have those communications about what are maybe not the most nuanced understanding, but are still real understanding what's happening. And I think that what you're saying is true. That's how music plays a part. And where the internet has done a lot of negative, I think the positive is that we can connect. And if you remove the idea of needing to be financially successful from it, then it's a wonderful way that you can hear people all over the world doing small things. And it doesn't matter the trajectory of their career, just matters like if they're interpreting something that means something to a lot of people. And that's, I think, the point of it.
Yeah, there definitely needs to be a significant change in the system overall. If you want to be incredibly successful, the amount of like exploitation you have to put yourself through. Like when we're looking at K-pop artists out in South Korea, like it is just a brutal fight all the time to stay on the tops there. And yeah. I mean, a lot of these people are very, very successful, but just what they have to go through. And it would be nice to see a shift. I was speaking with an artist for another interview, Noreen Braun. She released an album called A Song for Trees. Her goal was to create an album where you sit down and just listen through the whole thing. Something that we don't really do anymore in the age of TikTok and social media, where it's just bites of a song or one song that you play over and over and over again. It is nice to just sit down and go through this experience to hear the story of what the artist wants to share with you.
And I think it's one of those small rebellions we can do. It's like what we're left with, I think, with the way our society has been structured, is these little revolutionary acts. And to sit and take that time to be with something is not what we're supposed to do. Our lives are cut down to the second now, every interaction. So to create a piece and expect someone to, it's giving them the gift to take a time, take 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and just sit with something. We don't do that anymore, but that's what we want to do. I find it interesting that if you read a lot of kind of the base anthropological look at humans and kind of early return hunter-gatherer societies, one of the things people find they do most is nothing. And not nothing in like a lazy way, just be, just exist. And I think that's inherent to who we are as people. And we've just ripped that ability away to just sit and have a second.
Yeah, the grind mindset can be very detrimental to someone's mental and physical health.
Yeah, you're done work and then you go home and you're grinding on your social media, your brand, you're building your brand, you're building your, you're making sure that you're improving yourself. You're endlessly doing something because you're not doing something, you're doing nothing. Doing nothing is a negative thing. But I think the great thing.
Well, it's great because then you can reflect not only on yourself, but the world around you. When you're there with people, you can just connect. Like there's nothing more fulfilling to me than sitting down and watching a movie with friends, not necessarily paying attention to it, but just have it in the background while, you know, just being there with each other. And in this modern era, it can be really hard just to unwind because you'll be like, well, did I rest today? No, I was too anxious about not being productive that I wasn't able to rest.
Endlessly productive, but you can't even take the time. And that's harder to connect because you're not even sure what you think or feel because you haven't had the time to actually examine what you think or feel. So of course everything gets down to like, well, I guess I believe this soundbite or this. Polarization kind of spreads from that inability to have the time to think and be nuanced in how you actually do feel about things.
Mm-hmm. So when you're writing these songs, what did you learn from them? And how will you approach your music moving forward?
I think what I learned, and a very late lesson very big lesson for me was to just finally turn off the little voice that says, how will someone else appreciate this? And just actually do what I found interesting and what I thought was good. When you make a decision, you know, should I do this thing here or this or not? Before it'd be like, well, I kind of want to do this, but how will this be perceived? I just was able to completely silence that voice, and that made it a really positive experience. And I think that I've learned how to work that muscle in the future. So I'm going to bring that forward. And I also learned a lot of technical, it was a learning process on how to use the equipment in a way that I hadn't used it before. And that opened up a number of possibilities for future kind of presentation of songs.
Mm-hmm. So this is also a very connected project. You recorded with your wife, a friend co-produced it. Why was it important for you to create this as an independent release?
I would say that it was less a choice and more just, I didn't question it. I wanted my wife to sing because I really wanted her to sing on it. My wife's not a musician and has never had any aspirations or relationship. She's an avid music listener, and I think she has a lovely voice. But I basically just said, you're singing on this, and I'm going to make you sit down and practice these songs with me. And I think she really liked it, I think. And then for our friend Jace, I just have worked with him before, and I trust him. And I wasn't interested in chasing labels. I'm not interested in that anymore, nor would they be interested in me, like a 40-year-old guy in Halifax. I've been pretty lucky to do well on the publishing and licensing side of things. So it wouldn't even be a lot, I feel, at this point, a label could do for me, because you're either touring or you're getting publishing money. And that's basically it to finance yourself. And I got two young kids, and I've done a ton of touring, and I would love to tour a bit more, but I'm not going to go slog it out for years for someone else and might kill myself anymore. So I have the publishing, so I'm able to put out records in a way that, you know, it's small and it's simple, and but it makes me happy and I like what I'm doing, and there's a freedom to that.
Well, yeah, it's something that you and those close around you own, that it's something you can be proud of and have ownership. Yeah. That's something a lot of people don't have anymore, an ownership over the things that they create.
No, it's true. And a number of friends of mine are in much more financially successful touring bands, and it's killing them. It kills them. And I watched it, and I wanted it so badly when I was younger, and I got a taste of it, never to the extent of like a big indie label or like a major label, but I did my fair share of like slogging it out on the road for years. And I'm not sure it's worth it. I'm not sure anymore that it's worth it artistically or personally, the sacrifices that need to be made. At the end of the day, it's like you had said earlier, it's a very, it's a pretty dark industry, as most of the arts industries are. And there's a lot of people who profit off of it that don't have to make those sacrifices that the musicians do. And I don't think that I think music shouldn't be something that you have to sacrifice friends and family and love and health for. I think it should be something that should be embracing those, as opposed to just being, you know, like a cog sent on the road and run down to your nub and then thrown away when you can't do it anymore. It's interesting. I was just reading this morning that they're talking about the drummer from Foo Fighters, Taylor Hawkins, who passed away. And I guess Chad Smith, the drummer from Red Hot Chili Peppers, and Matt Cameron, I think, was the drummer for Pearl Jam back in the day, both said that Taylor Hawkins had expressed that he just couldn't do it. He didn't want to do it anymore. And he talked to their management and he said, it's killing me. And then it literally killed him. So that's on the extreme level, but it's not a healthy lifestyle with it. Musicians have to do. And it's fun when you're 20, but it's even 24-year-olds start being like, I'm tired, man.
Yeah, it's a very similar ecosystem within the like YouTube or Twitch streaming area, where agents, at least from the one YouTuber that I was listening to about his experiences, he wanted to go independent, not be connected to a label or an agent, anything like that. Because sometimes it feels that you're paying them and for things that you could do yourself, or they're just making money. I mean, it's very different for like Hollywood actors and agents and things like that. But for just YouTube, at least his experience, it felt that agents weren't adding anything to his life, just giving him a headache.
Yeah, I would imagine it. It's interesting. I don't know that world well, and I'm interested in that world because it's so prevalent and it's the dominant form. But it's funny how the same characteristics just transfer over. It doesn't matter the medium. You're still going to get the same kind of hierarchical relationships between those who are going to own what you do and control what you do, but sell it to you like they're helping your career. But really, at the end of the day, they're just making money. That's what they want to do. And they feel there's a, they'll manipulate you and they'll go to someone else if you're not willing to play. And so it's, I imagine that's tricky.
We're definitely on a precipice in terms of just late stage capitalism and exploitation and just how our systems worldwide are working right now, where people are like, this can't be what existence is, right? This can't be all that is meant for, like, us as humans evolving over millions of years to get to this point. This isn't what life was meant to, right?
I don't think so at all. Just to have a bunch of stuff that you don't know why you have, and to have no time, and to have community connections, spiritual connections, familiar connections, all broken down in the name of having a strong economy that doesn't even reflect back to the majority of the people living there. So what, you're just like, if I don't have time, I don't have a great like community, I don't have my church I go to, I don't have my community center, I don't know my neighbors, I have a bunch of stuff that I'm paying off debt, making people money off interest, and I'm just stressed all the time, and I watch a lot of Netflix. Like, is this really where a being that exists to, we can interpret the universe, we can see it and breathe and smell it, and that's what we're doing with it? Seems pretty ridiculous to me.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole philosophical debate that we could have about, you know, the point of existence. And I'm not saying that human advancement and human technology is a bad thing.
Like, no, of course not.
One of the beautiful things is seeing what humanity can accomplish when it's not just, you know, monetary gain or consumerism or capitalism just to get as much money as possible. Seeing the arts created, of course you need a lot of resources to make it, but when we're looking at like the Sistine Chapel, or just one of my favorite things right now is like carved woods, a wood, or carved stone pillars and stone. It's just what humans can accomplish is incredibly amazing, but we need to focus on the benefits of humankind as an all.
I mean, it's, I think the turn of the century anarchist, Peter Kropotkin, used to make the argument that this technology is wonderful. It's going to set us free to do all these wonderfully communal things. We're going to have no scarcity, and they're going to have time, and then we're going to bake and garden and make music and make these wonderfully advanced technological cities that are full of like just really possible ideas, and we've just thrown it out. And they also make the point that if you look backwards, kind of to what you're saying with the architecture of the Middle Ages, a lot of those city-states began as communal projects. So a lot of that art was done communally, a lot of that building was done communally. And that's something that's very interesting, and it's not presented that way, but that's the truth of the matter. These city-states were people working together because they had the time and the desire together to create. And that's what we do well, if we have time and if we have community.
I love watching Star Trek, and I've watched a couple of debates online of people just talking about, you know, what if we eventually reach that point where we can have fabricators that can change molecules into anything that we need? And of course, his mentality went, well, in a capitalist society, it's one of those things that it would be scarce because, you know, they want to keep it and then spend it out, even though it would solve all of Earth's problems and we wouldn't have to worry about money or things. We could solve climate change, access to hunger, clean drinking water. It would all be available. Yeah. But, you know, when you're trying to make money off of it, something that could change the world is just held in the hands of a few.
We're going to have to make some foundational changes at the bottom before we can, because we're already living in like a post-scarcity society, but nobody has enough drinking water or food. So that's a problem, because it's we have it. We can feed everyone.
Yeah, we have the technology to change the world. It's just we don't have those with the resources to do so, don't have the want or desire to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Coming back to music, what advice would you give to individuals looking to explore their passions and thoughts through music?
I would just say, corny as it sounds, just do it. Just play what you have. Play music. Have a cheap keyboard or guitar if you can get your hands on it. If you're at school, maybe go use the music room. And just do it, and do it in a way that it's just a joyful, fun thing to do. With to try to get rid ourselves of the notion of doing it purely for some sort of like feedback of success, or, you know, people are going to love me, all those sorts of things. While those are human characteristics, we should just do it because you love doing it. And if you love doing it and you have fun doing it, your life will be better. And then if something comes of it, that's great. But even if nothing comes of it, well, your life will be improved markedly because you get to participate in a very human thing, making music.
Where can people go to find out more about yourself and your new release, I Think You and Maybe Me?
We have a Bandcamp, wishka.bandcamp.com. I'm not a big user of social media. I'm on Twitter, at Jesse_Legale@twitter.com. I lurk mostly, and I'm not on Facebook or Instagram. I'm a bit wary of the social media, but you can definitely find it on the streaming, Apple Music and all that sort of stuff, and on Bandcamp.
Awesome. And, I mean, you're doing the right thing staying away from social media.
Trying to save my sanity a little bit.
Want to hear more stories and music from amazing people across Canada? Check out U Radio by U Multicultural. Listen in at u-channel.ca. I'm Ryan Funk. This was U Talk. And have yourself a good one.